Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out. Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello and welcome back to the New Books in Indian Religions podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Raj Balkaran. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Kaushiki Dasgupta. She's a professor of history at Vidyasagar University in West Bengal. And we'll be speaking about her brand new publication called Sadhus in Indian Politics, Dynamics of Hindutva. Kaushiki, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah. Thank you, Raj. Thank you, Dr. Raj Balkaran, for introducing me. And thank you for this program. I'm very much thrilled and delighted to be a part of New Books Network. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Listen, how did you, what's the backstory for this book? How did you get on this path of research?
As you know, that I'm from the discipline of history, and I was doing modern Indian history quite for a long period of time. And when I was doing my PhD, I actually doing some work on the political parties. And after that, I took some research projects on Hindu politics and Hindu political parties, particularly in Bengal, in undivided Bengal and partitioned Bengal also. So after that, when I was working on the research project on Bharatiya Janasangh and the other Hindu nationalist parties, how they performed in Bengal, and there I found some some sadhus, or you can say some ascetics, some organizations in Bengal, those who were very much involved in these sort of politics, but publicly they didn't ever declare that they are doing politics in a way or other. I found this sort of paradox very much interesting, that these organizations and these sadhus, they were working in favor of Hindu nationalism, but in the public domain, they are looking like, or they seem to be a kind of philanthropic organization or a seva or service provider sort of organization. And then I started looking for the connection between politics and this sort of asceticism in Bengal and in other parts of India. And there I found some new sources and the very patterns of their involvement in politics, how these sadhus, those who are within the political domain definitely, but they were not directly inclined with these sorts of political activities, electioneering or, the attempting elections or doing some sort of, mobilizations. They were not doing that, but somehow they were actually propagating the very interest of the Hindu nationalist parties and, of course, Hindu nationalism. So that's how I got the idea, and I started working on this book. And after working for almost 2 years, I came with this book, Sadhus in Indian Politics.
Say a bit about how the book is structured. Just tell us a bit about the chapters.
Yeah, actually, I have tried to analyze the patterns, as just I mentioned, the patterns of their involvement of the sadhus, how they are being involved in Indian politics from colonial to post-colonial time. So this is not a kind of chronological, or I have done it in a very orderly manner. It's not like that, but I picked up some themes, and this book is divided into 4 chapters, and it talks about the networks, the modalities that allowed the sadhus entry into the world of politics. And the sadhus, actually some of them deployed seva and sangatan sort of tactics as a primary sites of political mobilization, and some others, they stepped into the world of electoral politics after contributing a unique mosaic of Hindu traditionalism. So mostly these are the arguments, and I have divided the chapters. That the first chapter, it talks about the potential of Seva or service as a normative domain for reflecting greater political interest through numerous avenues and projects. And I have focused on Swami Pranavananda and Bharat Sebastian Sangha here as a case study. And this chapter, it talks about the original insights into the nuances of Hindu identity formation, Hindu consolidation through different Seva networks. And the second chapter, it's a bit different one. It brings into focus the problems of locating the world of traditionalism in the modern democratic structure. And it's clashed with the dominant right-wing version of Hindutva. For instance, I have picked here a North Indian yogi turned politician, Swami Karpatri Maharaj, and his party Ram Rajya Parisad as a classic example to understand the trends of orthodoxy and its conflict with modern democratic politics. And in the third chapter, I am talking about the shifting status of Hindutva as a movement in an age of information and technological boom, and it reveals many ways the new age gurus or Divedi Sadhus, they negotiated with the changing face of politics in a neoliberal India. So there are another chapter, it talks about the fragments of interest entering strong with the Vishwa Hindu Parishad through questioning its so-called authority over the sadhus with an institutional affiliation. And this chapter talks about the tensions and the transitions in Vishwa Hindu Parishad. It travels through the modern relationship the Vishwa Hindu Parishad shared with the sadhus, and it puts up the conflicts of interest present in the organization's vision of Hindu Rashtra in India. So in a way, this is the this is the themes what I have picked up in my chapters, and I have dealt with different issues with special case studies from different parts of India with a particular focus on Bengal and northern part of India. So these are the chapters in brief.
Thank you. So one of the things that I look at in my research, and of course, my particular research isn't relevant per se insofar as you need not know any of my scholarship. But one of the things that I love to look at in Sanskrit narrative, epics, Purana, is the tension between ascetics and kings. The tension between the socio-political and the spiritual, right, that we see in various iterations. And here I see a modern seeming convergence between yes. ascetics and kings, so to speak, sadhus and politics. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, given your discipline, particular research, do you see a tension in this? Is a tension seen on behalf of these actors or the public, or is this a tension that we find only in the Ramayana and ancient texts?
No, actually, it's very much here, because I can give you an example that the appointment of a Hindu sadhu like Jaggi Adityanath in the post of the chief ministership of the state of Uttar Pradesh by the Bharatiya Janata Sangh party in 2017, it's once again, it brought into focus these age-old template of religion influencing politics or vice versa. So in the absence of a vast amount of studies discussing the influence of this sort of interaction, or now it became, I think it actually became a project to trace out the sadhus trans politicians and stepped into the muddled world of party politics in independent India. And the existing studies on the subject, it's actually remained highly selective on the narrative narratives that are governing the nature of relationship between the sadhus and the political forces, both at organized and unorganized sector of politics. For instance, there are some researchers, those who are talking about the secretive world of the Naga sadhus, and they focused on their shifting status with the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangha towards the sadhu community. And there are researches on the role played by the sadhus in Indian nationalist politics, and mostly emphasized that this, how this RSS BHP Niyazo, served in dragging the sadhus into the courtiers of Hindutva. But this tension, what you were talking about, it is definitely there, because generally sadhus in India, they have been described as religious ascetics or holy persons. So they may live jointly in a monastery or may wander from one place to another. But when we talk about sadhus in politics, definitely this sort of understanding, it's being changed. And we need to put a new understanding of the subject, that how did the sadhus, why they were being dragged into this political world, and how this, the nationalist perception of asceticism, it has been changed from colonial to post-colonial time, and how it has been contested, it has become a contested domain that fought with the waves of secularism, leftist liberalism. So there are so many issues when we talk about this sadhu's involvement in politics. So somehow what you were referring, that which what was being done in the Mahabharata, that where we can pick up some references from the mythologies or from the text, this sort of tension, this sort of contradictions and paradoxes, I think these are becoming large nowadays, and we can trace definitely this issue is there.
Fascinating. What would you, as you may be aware, certainly my listeners are aware, I entertain a variety of views and perspectives on the podcast, and it's a neutral space to support whatever scholarship's being produced. What would you say the main takeaway of this research is? What are you demonstrating primarily here?
I'm trying to demonstrate, firstly, if I need to point it out, that what we have seen in a general perception, that almost all the sadhus, those who are involved in politics in a way or other, they are being called as Hindu nationalist sadhus, or somehow they are being dragged into a homogeneous universal framework of Hindu nationalism. They're working in favor of Hindu Rashtra, or they are somehow committed to a particular political ideology. But the thing is not like that, because this sadhuism or asceticism, when we talk about it in terms of politics, it occupied multiple imaginations throughout history and even in post-colonial time. So sadhuism is a social, religious, and political phenomena. It facilitated multiple interpretations of a historical trajectory. It reinvented nationalism, it contested colonialism, and it provided the essential rationale to induce the ideal of individual, self-spirituality within the systematically outlined boundary of a distinct political culture. So I would say that when we talk about sadhus doing politics or sadhus working for the political parties, we mustn't, limit our visions into a particular political or the very sort of election-oriented politics. It's not like that, because what we have seen in early colonial time, the sadhus, those who are working for the society, for instance, from post-Vivekananda time, we have found this ideal of Vedanta when we talk about social recognition of the self, how to realize the self from within the society, or to be involved in social service projects. The sadhus were doing politics in a way or other, but definitely this was not a politics of self-interest. This is a politics of nationalism. But when we talk about sadhus doing politics in contemporary time, somehow we are putting them into the same bracket like a politician. But I shouldn't call them politicians. They are sadhus. Definitely, they would continue to be the sadhus or the ascetics. They are not the politicians. But we need to understand the patterns and the networks of their involvement in politics. So that is the particular theme I have tried to work into my book.
What are your primary What data are you looking at? What primarily are you using to construct your arguments?
I have taken, definitely I worked on the primary sources and other than the secondary sources. And I have taken interviews from the sadhus. I visited the Kumbh Melas and different, you know, pilgrimage centers in India whenever I got a chance. And I visited Ganga Sagar Melas and the other centers like Haridwar, Kasi. And there I tried to take interviews. Definitely they were not very much easy, or they didn't want to share their ideas of politics or their involvement in politics, but I tried to capture their mind as far as possible. And I worked in the British Library for quite a long period of time, and there I found some the pamphlets, some rare newspaper clippings, some of the speeches that those were being transcribed, and some audio recordings. So that primary source set I used when I was writing this book. And other than this, I visited the ashramas, the deras of these sadhus, in particularly in Bengal, and the centers of these sangs and missions. And there I found a huge, you know, quantity of literature. There are different sort of literatures they have preserved in their libraries, in their archives. So these are basically my sources.
What surprised you the most about this research?
I found that, you know, first thing is, for instance, the difference, the way we talk about sadhus doing politics in a general perception is very much different when we talk about sadhus doing a kind of, you know, what I can say, a sort of spiritual maneuverings for their own community. And sometimes they are involved in a kind of bargaining for their own development also. For instance, the sadhus, those who are involved in the Vishwa Hindu Parishad, and they are visiting different Hindu fairs and different congregations. I would not say that they were doing a kind of nationalist job, or they're working for the society, but definitely there are sadhus, those who are very much committed for the development of the society, or they are taking politics as something, as a medium, as an instrument of, you know, serving the society. But there are sadhus, those who are very much conservative traditionalists in their approaches, and they are trying to improve the perceptions of their community. They are trying to provide some sort of, you know, comfort to their community. For instance, they're trying to have some monetary grants from the government or from the other NGOs or the political organizations. They're trying to build their own network in India and abroad. And they are using different, you know, these digital medias and channels for the benefit of their own community. So I found it really weird, and I didn't like this idea, actually, because in a general perception, what we know in Indian, the sadhus or the ascetics, they are selfless creatures, they are working for the society, they are some divine creatures, they are spiritual masters, spiritual persons. But in this muddled world of politics, I found them just like a, you know, common individual. That was a very unfortunate thing what I got during my research.
Is this research that you hope to continue?
Yeah, I am currently I'm working on another project. It's actually on science and spirituality and nation building. And I have some references for my earlier work. And I am working on the very ideas of the evolution of the idea of spirituality, the differences between spirituality and religion, how it is being realized in an Indian situation, and how these sadhus or the ascetics, and there are some lesser known sadhus on whom I am just trying to concentrate on, how they have contributed to this project of spirituality and what sort of contribution they have made to the society and how spirituality has been transformed into a kind of secular project, secular mode of social service. So these are the issues what I am dealing with right now, and definitely I am picking some references, some ideas from this book, Sadhus in Indian Politics. Yeah.
Could you say a little bit more about this idea of how spirituality is used in the secular arena?
Yeah, what I found that currently I'm working on the very aspects, the very spiritual organizations in post-colonial time. And you see that from the time of late 19th century India, or when this Brahmoism or these Brahmos, they are trying to talk about a kind of universalism, universal humanism, not only from actually from 19th century, but from earlier time also, we have been a kind of exposure to this idea of spiritually enriched humanism, which is definitely different from the humanism from the West. So these 19th century intellectuals, reformers, thinkers, they somehow developed this idea of spiritual humanism, and through the writings of different philosophers, intellectuals, poets, politicians, of course, and ultimately through different discourses and through different analysis from different analytical frames, what we have found that after independence, there were possibilities of transforming spirituality or accommodating spirituality into the secular discourse of India, but it was not been done. This was not the case. But the way spirituality was projected after independence, it was completely different from the perception which has been developed since ancient time, or particularly in 19th century and early 20th century India. The ideas of Neo-Vedanta, the ideas of Neo-Hinduism, these were definitely, there were the secularist spirit or secularist essence. These were definitely there, but somehow these have been ignored. Rather, a kind of secularism, which was a Western import, it has been produced and it has been manufactured and it has been imposed on the very social fabric of India. But there were the possibilities that whether we could accommodate secularity and spirituality into one particular political frame or into one analytical frame, the result would have been different. But that sort of experimentations had never been done in a proper label. And all these Congress politicians from Nehru to his these generations followed by Nehru, they didn't work on this subject. They had different scopes and opportunities, but they didn't work on this particular issue, and they somehow ignored the very possibilities of spirituality in India. So that is the thing what I'm trying to explore right now.
So the final substantive chapter of your book, could you say a bit more about New Age gurus, what you call the votaries of universal Hindutva?
Yeah. This is a chapter which is based on the digital gurus, I should say, and the very issues of commercial spirituality and the commodifying spirituality, how they were doing this sort of activities in India and in a diasporic situation, and they're selling the very traditional knowledge and the very paramparic guru-based knowledge, how it's being commodified in a new emerging spiritual market. And this New Age gurus, they are trying to project a new narrative of politics, religion, spirituality, and definitely there were the compulsions of a state which was on them. But the thing is that to what extent this format of Hinduism would be conducive to the ideology of Hindutva, it created the enigma of putting spirituality and religiosity in their respective terrains. So these New Age gurus, somehow they are doing a different sort of job, and they are trying to put focus on individualism, self-spirituality, and they are trying to sell spirituality in an international market. So these ideas I have tried to explore in this and book, and I picked up references from Sadhguru, from Ravi Shankar, the New Age gurus, and some other gurus also. And so this is actually, I think I should work more on this particular issue, and because this is a very interesting and fascinating one. And what I have seen that here, these New Age gurus, they are actually directly working for a particular political party or a sort of political ideology, but somehow it's very difficult to trace the very link, because they are very much popular with the urban middle classes, they are very much popular with the urban youths. So it's very difficult to call them a political agent. They are gurus or they are sadhus, definitely they are like that, but it's very difficult to trace the link that how they are being involved in modern day sort of politics or state democracy. They are projecting a certain kind of political ideology. So these are the, you know, the issues I have attempted to deal with in this particular chapter.
And when you say it's very difficult to find the link, are you saying that you have found links that were difficult to find?
Yeah, I found links, because there are very, you know, scattered references when they are tweeting, they are making Facebook posts, or they are organizing seminars, they are participating in conferences abroad. So in a way or other, they're trying to advocate, they're trying to project the very importance of a certain political ideology in the name of Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. They're using this sort of, you know, this sort of ideas that, and even the market, particularly the social media, YouTube channels, television channels, different newsletters, posters, video cassette, advertisements on print and electronic media. It's a huge marketing strategies that they are using. And marketing strategies, media support brought this new discourse of sadhuism into a dialogue with a larger audience, definitely, and especially with the urban classes, as I mentioned. And these urban classes, they appear to be very much crucial to negotiating the power dynamics of Hindutva with Bharativatta through regular display and a participation in spiritual performative acts. So the links are there, but as I just mentioned, these are very vague. And you need to be very careful to call these sadhus, New Age sadhus or gurus, true politicians, but they are definitely politicians. But this pattern of involvement is quite unique, what I would say.
Fascinating. Is there anything else about the books that you hope to touch on today?
I think that I should ask the audience or the readers that that whenever they would be, they would take some interest in this sort of research, they must investigate the spirit of individualism, which has been reflected by Indian sadhus throughout the ages, whether they are involved in politics or not. Because what we have found, these people, they are trying to treat politics as janosheva, but the general common politicians, they are doing politics as rajniti. So you need to be very much specific between the differences between janosheva and rajniti. But nowadays, almost all the politicians, they are claiming that they are doing some sort of seva in the name of politics. But in reality, it's not the case. And the very spirit of individualism, which is being reflected by the sadhus in organized and unorganized domain of politics. So we should be specific about the very dialectics of Hindutva when we talk about these sadhus, because generally in the political science literature or in history literature, there is one dominant understanding of Hindutva, but Hindutva is not that what when we talk about Savarkar or the other thinkers, but this is not only one connotation of Hindutva. There are multiple connotations of Hindutva from regional perspective, from caste perspective, from linguistic perspective. So you need to be very much specific that what is Hindutva in a specific context. So that is my first, that is the thing what I need to emphasize here. And also what I just mentioned, that the sadhus and gurus, how did they explore the very idea of Hinduness, of the Hindus, and confronts the very narratives of a dominant mode of Hindutva offered by a particular political party or political institutions.
Thank you very much for appearing on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for this wonderful interaction. And thank you and my best wishes for doing this job. And I really appreciate of this new book network, how they are introducing new subjects and new researchers to the academic domain. Thank you, Dr. Raj. Thank you so much for being with me.
Yes, my pleasure. My pleasure. For those of you listening.
I'm listening.
For those of you listening in the audience, we have been speaking with Dr. Kaushiki Dasgupta, professor of history at the Vidyasagar University. We've been speaking with her about her new 2021 SAGE publishing book, Sadhus in Indian Politics, Dynamics of Hindutva. Until next time, stay safe, stay sane, keep listening, keep reading, and keep contemplating sadhus involved in politics. Take care.